Gasoline Convenience Store Association, and Tony Russo from CIANJ. Eric, you're seeking amendments. Tony's opposed. And again, a second call for Mary Ellen Pappard from Food Council. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're starting to run out of time. I have submitted a lengthy testimony on this that I encourage you all to read. I'll just summarize real quick for the three bills all at once. I'm from the New Jersey Gasoline Convenience Automotive Association. As most of you know, we represent about 1,000 independent small businesses across the state. We are not opposed to any of the main vaping regulations here today. In fact, after discussion with our members, some of the main ones like the electronic ID verification mandate is something I think we would support as a necessary step. Most of the amendments that I submitted are largely technical. Just to hit on a few of the most important ones, in the flavor ban, the definition of characterizing flavor is so broad that it includes tobacco flavor. So that I'm not sure that anyone sells a non-flavored quote-unquote product, and my understanding is that the basic components of vaping liquid actually have a mildly sweet flavor to them, so even if someone did sell it, it would probably be less effective to the goals of the committee than just actually having a tobacco flavor allowed. I know that bill was also amended to include a ban on menthol cigarettes, which we oppose that amendment. About 40% of all cigarettes still sold in the state are menthols. I certainly understand that, you know, if there were to be a 40% reduction in smoking rates, that would be probably well worth the $250 million hit to the budget and the hit to small businesses. However, we feel that to be the only state with a menthol cigarette ban would not produce anywhere near that kind of reduction in terms of actual smoking, because most people live within an hour or so border of Pennsylvania, where you can already buy if you're 18, 19, or 20. There would also be a big increase in black market products. We already have a problem with smuggling. In Virginia, the tax is 30 cents a pack. Ours is $2.70, so there's already a big financial incentive to do that, and this would only increase it. On the biggest issue we have with A5922 is that it would prevent the sale of liquid nicotine vaping liquid with a nicotine content of more than 2% effective 4 months after the bill passed. The problem with that we have is not so much the merits of it. It's just that, as far as I'm aware, there really aren't any cartridge systems that have a nicotine content that low. And because of the FDA rules, it's not as simple as they just need to go to the factory and flip a switch and suddenly they're selling 2%. The FDA, through the Tobacco Control Act of 2009, in August 2016, they deemed vaping products to be tobacco-related. So it's actually, so legally you're not supposed to be bringing any new vaping products to the market from that date. The ones on the market you could continue to sell until May of 2020, which is about when this bill would go into effect. Then the FDA has to approve that product. The applications are extremely lengthy. So far, only Reynolds has submitted one. It was 150,000 pages long. So the approval process takes about a year, and then any change to that product needs subsequent approval. So even if you're just lowering the nicotine content. So in effect, the current nicotine content language would effectively ban basically all of the cartridge systems. I'm not sure if that's the intent. Even if it was moved to 5 and maybe phased in over time to a lower level, that would at least allow some amount of product to continue. And like I said, I have lengthier provisions in the language I've submitted that I'd like you to look at.
Thank you for that. You mentioned something that which I think is going to be the subject of quite a bit of discussion as these bills make their way through the process, is what to do about this effect on the cartridge systems. On the one hand, they do tend, reading about this last night, to have higher levels of nicotine in them. On the other hand, the open systems, they're regulatory problems with those, in my view, trying to track them, trying to make sure we know what's in those products and the like. At least in a sort of pre-manufactured kind of a system, you have a better handle on what's going on there and can more easily track the flow of that product through the distribution system. So I've talked to our counsel at the Truth Initiative and others trying to figure out whether or not you're correct, and if the nicotine content is lowered, does that then trigger a very lengthy, repeat, if you will, of the process through the FDA, when all that's really changed is the nicotine content and nothing else about how the device is delivered? Now, maybe that changes what happens with the electronics and the heating. The science behind it, maybe there's a good reason for the FDA to get in it if the nicotine is lowered, but that's something I believe it's going to be important for the sponsors to sort of sort out as this legislation makes its way through the process. There has been a charge in the discussions outside of this room that the members of your association are a significant source of leakage into the youth space. What do you say about that?
Yes, well, actually, we have a study, academic study, that was published in the American Journal of Health Promotion, that's mentioned in the testimony submitted in 2018, that did dive into where do young people get their products. They found that about two-thirds get them from social sources, friends, or purchase from other people. Only about 30% get them from any kind of retail. Of those that get them from retail, the number one source is the internet. Beyond that, if you combine the total number of convenience store, gas station, grocery store, and liquor store, it only amounts to 8%. And then, for obviously, any amount is too much, but we think the other provisions of this bill, especially the electronic ID verification mandate, the increases in fines, will work, and the suspensions of licenses and the other enforcement aspects in this will cut down on anyone else who continues to do it.
That we have included those provisions, as you've outlined in the other legislation, to deal with that issue. But you do raise a point that I think should require some attention, garner some attention by members of this committee, and that is the social aspect of this thing. I mean, there are going to be people who, depending on what we do with respect to the flavor ban, there are going to be people in and among us who will be, who are going to be, I'll say, sloppy and really not thinking about, transferring these items or allowing somebody who's very young to experiment with these things and unwittingly then get this child, addicted to nicotine, and then here we go with a long walk down a very treacherous path. So I think it informs what I think we're going to need to do with respect to these flavors because of the easy way in which these products seem to move around in a social network that that is more easily beyond the reach of what we can do in the regulatory space. I think that bears some note. Any questions for this witness, Ms. Fire? Thank you. We'll wait on, why don't we bring up some positives.